Blog Talk Radio.
I am the song that the builder refused. I am the visual, the inspiration that made ladies sing the blues. I'm the spark that makes your idea bright. The same spark that lights the dark so that you can know your left from your right. I am the ballad in your box, the bullet in the gun, the inner glow that lets you know to call your brother son. The story that just begun, the promise of what's to come. And I'ma remain a soldier till the war is won. One. Chop, chop, chop. I am the song that the builder refused. I am the visual, the inspiration that made ladies sing the blues. I'm the spark that makes your idea bright. The same spark that lights the dark so that you can know your left from your right. I am the ballad in your box, the bullet in the gun, the inner glow that lets you know to call your brother son. The story that just begun, the promise of what's to come. And I'ma remain a soldier till the war is won. Won. I am the song that the builder refused. I am the visual, the inspiration that made ladies sing the blues. I'm the spark that makes your idea bright. The same spark that lights the dark so that you can know your left from your right. I am the ballad in your box, the bullet in the gun, the inner glow that lets you know to call your brother son. The story that just begun, the promise of what's to come. And I'ma remain a soldier till the war is won. Won.
That's right. That's right. Good evening, everyone. Good evening and welcome to a special broadcast of Gumbo Food Soul Radio. I'm your host, Lady Serenity, a.k.a. author Rachel Berry. So excited to be here with you tonight. It's Thankful Thursday, everyone. Did you take time today to ponder on all that you are thankful for? I hope so. After all, tomorrow is Fantastic Friday, and it's another chance to count your blessings and recognize just how rich your life really is. We're serving up some special gumbo tonight, some rich mind food, in recognition of Black History Month. This special episode of The Young, Gifted, and Black celebrates our rich culture and history that's blended with a panel of guests as diverse as a hot bowl of gumbo. We bring it live tonight, y'all. And a special note, this episode is dedicated to Cato. Rest in peace, our brother, from March 7th, 1980 through February 7th, 2008. Folks, if you wish to speak to any of my guests or myself tonight, the call-in number is 718-305-6993. That's 718-305-6993. Of course, if you're listening in on the line, please push 1 on your keypad, and that's going to put you in queue, and I'll be more than happy to take your call. And don't forget to tune into our sister station now, also here on Blog Talk Radio, From the Heart and Soul Show. It's produced and hosted by moi. So tune in on www.blogtalkradio/LadySerenity. There I'm putting a mellow view to all that we do while doing it from the heart and soul. Like I said, we have a hot show for you tonight, brought to you none other than by our lady who is constantly putting her own stamp on Black history, the creator of Gumbo for the Soul Publications and Gumbo for the Soul Radio's executive producer, Ms. Beverly Black Johnson. Welcome to the show tonight, lady. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, my sister. It is always a pleasure to partake in the gumbo and serve up some mind food with you.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I'm so thankful that you've asked me to be here and share in this wonderful night with you. You've got a wonderful line up. We have a couple of people that were still waiting to join us, but we're going to keep it moving because we have lined up tonight to celebrate Mr. Delibri, also San Quinn, and the lovely Kiana Bean. Also, last but not least, is Miss Loretta Hardrick, who is on the line with us. And Miss Loretta Hardrick is an author celebrating her recently released book, A Poet's Music, Heart, Soul, and Spirit. I'm sorry, Bev, were you going to say something?
I just wanted to say that Delibri is actually at a community event shedding light on life and doing a funding campaign out there with the children. He will be calling in at 4:30, so he's just out there showing his support in the community, and that's what they these youth are doing right now.
Okay, okay, wonderful. We're glad to hear that. Let me tell you a little bit about D. LaBrie, okay? He has a single out called, an upcoming release called It Ain't Easy. He's an outreach director of Hip Hop Congress, East Bay MC, and president of RDV Records, and an alumni of AmeriCorps. Also waiting to join us is San Quinn, legendary San Francisco MC and activist and Hip Hop Congress affiliate. Also coming to the phone soon will be the lovely Kiana Bean. She's a hip-hop rap artist hailing from the San Francisco Bay Area, dubbed by Freeway, which is the former host of 106 in Park, as the Bay Area's best-kept secret. Kiana is fast becoming globally known with her music and collaborations around the world. So we really look forward to seeing these young people come online and just can't wait for the show to begin. Again, like I said, we've got Loretta Hardrick here, who is an author celebrating her recently released book, A Poet's Music, Heart and Soul and Spirit. It's surely a family affair. So welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Loretta, it's good to hear from you. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Just enjoying the show so far.
And we surely look forward to hear what you're going to bring to us a little later on. Bev, is there something that you wanted to share with us at this time?
Yes, I would. Thank you so much. I want to just let everyone know about Black history in itself. I was listening to a radio show about a week or two ago, and a young lady called in, and she made mention that, you know, they only give us a 28-day month to celebrate Black history. And the host found himself educating her about Black history. So I thought it'd be good for us to go over what Black History Month is and how it originated.
Mm-hmm.
The origins of Black History Month can be traced back to a man named Carter G. Woodson, 1875 through 1950. Woodson, the son of former slaves, was an amazing man in his own right. Since his family was too poor to send him to school as a child, he taught himself the basics of a school education. At age 20, Woodson was finally able to attend school, which he completed in just 2 years. He then went on to earn a bachelor's and a master's degree from the University of Chicago. In 1912, Woodson became only the second African-American to earn a doctorate from Harvard University. W.E.B. Du Bois was the first. Woodson used his hard-earned education to teach. He taught both in public schools and at Howard University. 3 years after earning his doctorate, Woodson made a trip that had a great impact on him. In 1915, he traveled to Chicago to participate in a 3-week celebration of the 50th anniversary of the end of slavery. The excitement and enthusiasm generated by the events inspired Woodson to continue the study of Black history year-round. Before leaving Chicago, Woodson and four others created the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, ASNLH, on September 9, 1915. The following year, the ASNLH began publication of the Journal of Negro History. Woodson realized that most textbooks at the time ignored the history and achievements of blacks. Thus, in addition to the journal, he wanted to find a way to encourage interest and study of black history. In 1926, Woodson promoted the idea of a Negro History Week, which was to be held during the second week of February. The idea caught on quickly, and Negro History Week was soon celebrated around the United States. With a high demand for study materials, the ASNLH began to produce pictures, posters, and lesson plans to help teachers bring Negro History Week into schools. In 1937, the ASNLH also began producing the Negro History Bulletin, which focused on an annual theme for Negro History Week. In 1976, the 50th anniversary of the beginning of Negro History Week and the bicentennial of the United States' independence, Black History Week was expanded to Black History Month. Ever since then, Black History Month has been celebrated in February around the country. Woodson chose the second week of February to celebrate Negro History Week because that week included the birthdays of two important men, President Abraham Lincoln, February 12th, and Frederick Douglass, February the 14th. When Negro History Week turned into Black History Month in 1976, the celebrations during the second week of February expanded to the entire month of February. And that is the origin of Black History
Month. Wow. Oh, my gosh. Let's just give an applause just for that. That's amazing. Excellent, excellent. And, you know, I personally had not heard of the ASNLH, so that's, you know, something new to learn. And it's always something new to learn about our history. I knew that it didn't start until 1976, or did it be the entire month that it had been a week, but I had not heard of that other part. And I think a lot of people, they don't even think about Black history just starting. We're only talking about 30-something years ago, so it has not been a long length of time that we've had our entire month, you know?
Exactly, and that's even more of a reason to celebrate Black history all year through.
Exactly.
We have so much to learn. And I echo that, Rachel. I didn't know about the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History either. So that in itself is history.
Yes, yes. And can you imagine, I can only imagine how much guts it took to, you know, bring this journal and this guide to the forefront so that people can start teaching, and how he might have been met with some resistance from some people who, you know, were not interested in hearing about us in our history. You know, I can only imagine how he felt. You know, I'm sure he was excited, but also, you know, thinking about things, because, you know, it's not too far that we've come from, you know, people being that prejudiced where, you know, we weren't able to do certain things. So I can only imagine how he felt or what he thought he might even encounter, you know.
That is absolutely true. The opposition and the in the face of racism at that time had to be extremely powerful.
Because even now, when, you know, say we come up with this new idea that we just want to install into our society, you know, we're still going to be met with resistance. You know, we're still going to have to go through all kinds of flips and flops and, you know, some doors that we're probably going to have to knock on that are going to shut in our faces, that and the other. We still have come a long ways to have a long ways to go. So just think back, you know, 36 years ago. How that was. It can, you know, you had to have a lot of guts. You had to be determined. You had to be focused. And you had to have vision, you know.
Yes. And, you know, in 1976, I mean, I was, I was a junior in high school. So we were still, while I'm yet a sophomore and, you know, before that, we're still saying Negro. History
or
week.
Color
so
people.
You
or
know
color
you
people.
Look at yeah, you look at the growth in itself, the progression as a people, you know, and that's without to say that we are the survivors of the slaves that made it to this point. So we honor our heritage, our legacy, and also the backs of those whom we stand on.
Most definitely, most definitely. Loretta, we're not leaving you out. Did you have anything that you wanted to add to the conversation?
Yeah, I wanted to say that I knew it was in 76, but I hadn't heard of that association either, but I did not know that it started out with a week, and then that's how it progressed up to a whole month. So that was good information.
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so I know for me, Black History Month, what it means for me is a time to reflect, you know, in general on what we've done and where we've come from. Of course, we do that all year round, but it's like letting the nation and the world know, okay, you know, whatever else you're doing, you might not even take part in this, but you have to recognize that it is being recognized. It's in your face. It's wherever you look. It's where you, what you hear and what you see. So you have to recognize it whether you want to or not. You know, you don't have to agree with it. Some people might not agree with it. I'm sure there's a lot of people who still you know, prejudice against certain things and whatnot, and they can be any way they want to. But it's in the system now, if nothing else. It's in your face, it exists, and it's celebrated. And so for me, it's a wonderful time to say, yes, this is who I am, this is what I'm a part of, and just to see the richness of where we've come from, making you want to also know your own personal lineage and what you belong to and where you come from, which is something else that we all should do, like you and I were talking not too long ago, Bev, of just, you know, even tracing our own roots and just finding out about the people that we come from and who in our family tree has done what. And it's just a wonderful time just to, you know, be recognized and to have pride and to constantly, mm-hmm. again, keep learning different mm-hmm. things. That's what Black History Month means to me. What about you, Loretta?
Exactly. I was just checking out a couple of months back. Well, actually, a couple of weeks ago, I had went in to try and find out some of my heritage to go as far back as I possibly could. But then I saw on television where this one, they said it's very hard for African Americans to go back to the beginning, for the simple fact of when the slave owners had documentation, when freedom came about, they destroyed most of those documents so that it wouldn't incriminate them. So I was actually saying I want to be able to go back as far as I possibly can as well to find out who did what happened, why it happened, when it happened, my great-grandparents. I want to know all of that. I just want to find a way to figure it out and go back as far as I possibly can.
Because then you also find out who you are. You know more of who you are and why you think of some of the things you think and why you act and look the way you. You know, it's just amazing. You know, you find out about your DNA. You find out about your character. You find so much out. You know.
Yes.
So what does it mean to you, Beth?
Well, you know, first of all, before I even answer that question, I just would like to acknowledge Loretta Hardwick is my aunt.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say that to me, that is history for me to learn, because we're only in contact with each other since her brother, my dad, passed in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's in Oklahoma and I'm in California, and, the distance of information and, you know, geographically and, you know, and disconnect, we would not learn of each other until now, although we knew, you know, she knew her brother had kids and didn't know exactly me, and I knew my dad had, you know, other siblings, and I didn't exactly know who it was. So I'm honored to be connected with another piece of my history, legacy, and family.
Wonderful.
Amen. And so in her search for who she is on her father's side, she will be answering who I am on that side.
Mm-hmm.
And what Black history means to me is legacy, education, struggle. It's honoring our ancestors. It's honoring the history of exactly where we came from. We have to understand that we are a powerful people. We are, like I said, survivors of slaves. And so in that in itself, that's powerful in itself to say that we are survivors of slaves. And here we are. Here we are. And that's the actuality of it. We weren't born somewhere else and then brought here. And, you know, our people, the diaspora that brought them here, hold on one second. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The diaspora that brought us here, it's just amazing. Just I'm sorry, I lost my concentration and focus.
That's
something
okay.
interrupted
okay.
over here on
that's
this
okay.
end. But just it's just amazing looking at the culmination up to this point of us as a people,
mm-hmm.
as a people. We cannot ignore all the facts. And like Auntie Loretta said, I want to know what happened. I want to know what happened. I want to know why my grandmother's mother died at 12, when my grandmother was 12. What was happening in her life that it would take her out of here where she would leave young children behind? I don't know, you know. So, and then it was so interesting to be watching the African channel, African History Channel. I just want to say that for our listeners and for each other. The AfricanHistoryChannel.com, they have a tour that they supported that goes around and does swabs, DNA, and they will let you know where you stem from, what tribe, all the way back. And it's only like $275. So I'm going to do that on both my mother and my father's side. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing. So it just means everything to me, family, legacy, history, education, and just platforms like this that says we have to continue to take it to another level where we're teaching and letting the ones know that come after us, you know, because information and the it's broken, you know, the information is broken, and elders die and they take information with them that, you know, we have to go dig up and find. And it's that time. It is truly that global time to find out who we are. We know whose we are, but we don't know who we are.
And I think we need to get back to the griot times as well, you know, the times where the family sat around and talked with the older people. Nowadays, a lot of children don't have time for the older people. They feel, oh, you know, they don't know what's going on. They're getting on my nerves, this, that, and other. And they don't realize how much knowledge about not only what that person knows, but if it's a family member, how much they can tell you about yourself. Because, you know, back in time, that's what they did, you know. People sat up and they talked and, you know, they listened to the elders. You know, the elders brought them into the world that they had no knowledge of. And, you know, it became something that was shared. And we don't do that much anymore. You know, families are so busy, you know, rushing in this, you know, fast-paced, instant world that sometimes we don't even get sit down and have dinner anymore. And that's something else that we, you know, we've shared. We need to get back to those things. So we need to really get back to our roots, bring back that richness of who we are and implanting in our children so we can continue to be proud. Because that's the reason why I think a lot of kids act up. They don't know who they are and what they should be proud of. You know, you don't need to act this way. You come from great people, and you are now the roots of the future greatness, you know. So at this time, I want to welcome to our show one of our guests. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing?
We're fine. Thanks for joining us. Let everyone know who you are.
Hi, my name is Dee LaBrie. I'm a hip-hop artist from Oakland, California, and I'm also an organizer with Hip Hop Congress and the founder of Rendezvous Records and a good friend of everybody on this call and very much an admirer and, learner of all this that I'm hearing so far.
Yes. Dee LaBrie, we thank you. We read a little bit about your bio before you came on, and right now you're on with Beverly and Loretta. We're still waiting for our other two guests to join us, but we're so happy. We know that you were in the community doing your thing. Tell us a little bit about what you just came from.
It's a Black History event at Arroyo Park, which is very much near where I grew up, near 73rd, near Eastmont Mall in Oakland. And it's kind of special because my mom took me here a lot when I was young. And, you know, I grew up pretty much just with my mom, so she always tried to keep me active and take me places and show me around. Like, we never had a car, so she took me everywhere. So we used to walk, catch the bus, you know, all that stuff. So I have a lot of fond memories at this place. And a good friend of mine works here, so, you know, he kind of hooked it up and was like, yo, you're doing all this community stuff. Why don't you come through? And, you know, so we put it on the tour. So it's just an honor, man. It's just a bunch of young people up here learning stuff and hanging out and building.
Yeah.
So it's nice.
And we commend you. We commend you because you could be doing a million other things, negative other things. And we commend you for being a young man in the community trying to make a difference in the community. So this is just for you right here. That's for you.
I like that. Thank you.
We were discussing Black History Month and what it means to us. Let us know what it means to you.
I did check that out, and I definitely felt what I was hearing. For me, the first thing I remember when I think of Black History Month is being a kid, and I kind of think of it through the eyes of of what it meant to me as a youngster versus now. So I feel like it represents a lot of things that I may take for granted now that meant a lot more when I was younger, because for now I've been through so much and I've gotten so much opportunity to learn and actually build on this knowledge that it's like it's something that's just a part of me. But back then, I can't imagine what it would be like to just not have it, like growing up and just having that month of activities and learning. And, you know, being in a place like Oakland, it was even more of a push for it, because it was a, you know, predominantly black city when I was growing up. So it was like something that I didn't really think too much of it, but because the fact that it was a national holiday and made automatic, it was something that I felt we were entitled to. And it wasn't something that I kind of felt a pride that maybe I didn't notice back then, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so my thoughts on it now, you know, a lot of times I hear people say, well, it's the shortest month and, you know, we shouldn't worry about it because every day is Black History. And, you know, I do tend to agree with that. For the most part, I feel like, you know, a lot of things that blacks have contributed has been kind of put to the back burner. And, you know, that's not by accident. A lot of the history is not told properly. But in our communities, we do have a lot of it passing on through our elders and, you know, through the music and through a lot of different mediums. But I take that for granted. You can't take for granted that when you're from a place like, you know, East Palo Alto or Oakland, you have that chance to get that automatic, you know, information. But I think that nowadays, like a lot of black people aren't necessarily from all black communities, may not see the importance of it. And I think sometimes it's like an eagerness to be like, well, we don't want to just be seen as the black people with the month, but we want to just be seen as normal Americans. But I think it's important that we do celebrate mm-hmm. our individual cultures, you know, mm-hmm. to form more unity in the future. So I think that it's important just because for the people who don't know, it makes sure that they take that time to really look at it. And not just, the thing about it, me, is it's, I don't like the clicheness of it. It's like, okay, it's Black History, so it's always Martin Luther King, it's always, nothing wrong with that, but I also feel like it needs to be expanded on, because it can't just be always the same figures. We have to realize there's a lot of Black History that's never been told, and like
exactly.
The whole core of this country has a lot to do with what blacks have contributed. And when you get all these bad stereotypes about blacks are this and blacks are that, to me, that's where the problem lies. They don't want to give credit to what blacks contributed through the struggle, but they always want to point out what we don't do right or what are our struggles. And then it's like kind of like blaming all black people for some of the injustices that we had nothing to do with. So I think it is important, and I equate that to being a kid and how important it was to my upbringing. Who knows, if there was no Black History Month, maybe I wouldn't be doing all this work I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So I think adults should remember that now that we're getting all progressive and we got Obama, and like I'm an adult as well now. You know, I think that it's important for us to remember that we do have to have these discussions. We can't run from our history and run from, you know, these type of things, and not just be just to be part of the bigger whole, be like, well, we don't want to talk about this no more because we're progressive, we have a black president. We still should remind people of these, because it does affect us in our everyday life. It may not affect Obama as much as it affects the grandmother down the street or the you know, the guys on the corner. Like, so I think it's still important, very important.
Well, yes, you do, and you've had a lot to say about it, too, and I truly appreciate
well
that.
Well said.
Definitely. Yeah, from the heart.
I got more to say, but I'm going to keep it at that for now.
You know, but this won't be the last time y'all hear from this young man. Y'all look for some more from Mr. D. LaBrie, and I'm going to have to keep that under wraps for now, but forthcoming. you'll be hearing for more, some more from Dee LaBrie.
And it's appreciative. It's appreciative that he is full. His spirit is full. His mind is busy, and he's also, you know, got his heart into it. You can definitely hear that. So with that said, Dee LaBrie, I want to ask you this. Years from now, when you're an old man or perhaps not even here anymore, and when people speak of you, what do you want them to say about you as a young man making Black history now?
Good question. Well, I think if we're talking about me personally, I think I make up a percentage of a group of you know, younger Black people, you know, that I don't want to just say men, but that are in this kind of middle ground generation where we kind of have the history of the elders, but we're also young enough to be a part of this new technology boom and this kind of new era. It feels kind of like a new era. So I feel like I was at one of the cutoff ages of that middle group where, you know, we kind of got that old school. We kind of experienced a degree of the old school racism, not like the Martin Luther King civil rights racism, but the harsh 80s Reagan era racism that still exists, but now it's in a different format. So I think we got enough of that to bring to this new group. But this, I think the newer group is more like, okay, that's the past. Let's like kind of unify. I think it's not as taboo to accept cultural difference as it used to be. Not that it's all soft, but so it's hard for me to just say my own individual legacy. But I think what I would like to be remembered for is definitely being from the blackest of hoods and the most struggling of hoods and surviving that and figuring out a way to take that and take the things that came my way and flip them back into a positive and take them outside of those areas, but also bring what I got outside the areas back. So I think my legacy would really be my people skills and my networking skills, like the ability to take who I am completely and not try to run from it, but also find those connections between that and others, because through my journey and through having Black History Month, I feel like I found the importance of the human race, like of every culture. I found the importance of peace and the harmonies and the love between different people. And like when we deal with the hatred that Blacks face, that was a hindrance on all people, because we all got so much to offer. Like, who wants to just be seen with their legacy as slave masters and hateful killers and murderers? And who wants that? So it's like we, through our struggle, taught white people how to get correct with their spirit. You know, you got all these white folks trying to come to rap now and trying to be down and voting for a Black president. And so I feel like I played a part in that through my music, through my networking, but through the music, I've let my music kind of guide me around the world and taking my music to not just for money and for fame, but to actually use it as a bridge for education and form new connections and bridges between people. And so now I can go back to the hood and I can tell people, like, look, all whites are not your enemy. Like, that's not the fight right there. Like, you need to learn your history clearly and know who you are, but also come into the world knowing that some of these things are just tricks and obstacles put in your way to make you stumble more. You know, you go out fighting everybody, you go out fighting your own, you need to be concentrating on learning valuable information that you can use and that you can build value with, not just financial value, but value. And so that you may find that in another country. You may find that, you know, with somebody that's nothing like you or not from the hood.
Right,
you can't just make it all about your background. So
right,
I would like that to be,
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that was I would like to talk. That's what I would like to be seen as, someone who came from that area of society and found a way to reach other levels of society through networking and through music and education.
Okay. Sounds right. And thank you for that, Delibree. If you're just tuning in, you've reached Gumbo for the Soul Radio. I am your radio mistress, Lady Serenity, and we're having a special Gumbo for the Soul Black History episode this evening. We're going to take a station break, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Cynthia St. James, and I just wanted to thank you for listening to Gumbo for the Soul Radio.
And as you know, that was Cynthia St. James, a very well-known artist who makes her own history as a designer. She is the designer of the Kwanzaa stamp and 2012 NAACP nominee, and many accolades to her bio as well. We're going to keep it moving, and we're going to get to you, Loretta, and just want to ask you, when did you begin your soul work? And what is the inspiration behind it?
Wow. Okay. I started actually writing poetry probably by the time I was 9 years old. And it started with the Roses is Red and Violets are Blue era. But uh-huh. then it kind of quickly changed into my actual culture. I started searching, I guess doing a little soul searching. People used to say, you're too advanced for your actual age, you know, being younger, because I looked at different situations, I looked at different struggles, I looked at different relationships inside, out of the church, as well as outside of the church. However, I was raised in the church. My father was a minister in the church, and my mother was a missionary. And so I had a actual spiritual background, and then I had to come into the knowledge of the truth and to learn Jesus for myself. I couldn't get in, you know, based on my parents. But I love poetry. I love a lot of the black poets, even, you know, dating back to Paul Laurence Dunbar and Langston Hughes, all that. I go back to that era, and I actually got really fascinated when I found a book entitled Golden Slip that has so much black culture. You know, so many black people in that little book. It's just a little compilation of all of the poetry from all the black poets and things back in the 1800s. And and that kind of just motivated me even more to find out what my people have went through and where we've come from and where we still have to go, that we cannot ever stop progressing. There's not a point you can say we have succeeded and we have done this. No, we have to continue and continue and continue, never to give up.
That's right.
Also who we're connected to. You know, this opens up the lines of communication laterally, and you start learning, you know, different regions and connections and cousins and kinfolk start coming out, and that's a good thing, you know.
It is.
Most definitely, most definitely. And so in writing your poetry, and I'm sure that you've had things that might have come to your mind at first to put down, and then while you're flowing, other things came into your mind. Do you think sometimes that you feel like you're being influenced not only by the people that you've read, but by your ancestors and the things around you and, the you know, your not just your culture, but the things that you've known about your family even?
Yes. You find yourself writing about, you know, different situations that you went through, even maybe when you were younger, things that you may have put in the back of your mind. When you start to write, it seems like some things just come back, and then you wonder, now, is this a dream, or did this really happen? You know, and then it's just like it's so vivid that you say, I have to put this down. I have to write it down. I used to let things slip and pass. But when it comes to me, I jump up, whether it's in the middle of the night, whether it's early in the morning, I jump up and write it down, even if I go back and lay down later, because when you lose it, it's gone.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. So now, Beverly, I have to ask you, because you are the creator of a phenomenal publications, Gumbo for the Soul publications are phenomenal, and you chose to concentrate on the Black community. Tell us, what was your inspiration when you began to put this together? Where did you think it would go, and what inspired you to keep it moving?
Well, you know, the inspiration is from the creator himself. You know, I asked him for something that day, and I sat quietly anticipating an answer, and he gave me Gumbo for the Soul. And I gladly accepted the charge, and I knew right then what was being planted in my spirit was for my people, for the African diaspora, you know. And, you know, we've all admired the well-known, popularly known Chicken Soup for the Soul, and Rachel, you are published in Chicken Soup for the Soul, one of the editions, and we're so proud of that in your history as well. And so we've been embracing inspirations and literature, you know, for a long time. Gumbo for the Soul just seemed to speak right to those southern roots, those that down home, it's gumbo, Louisiana, African diaspora, you know, mixed in with that okra brought out of Africa, the Indian heritage, all our French Creole. It just start bringing in all this savory heritage and diaspora from so many regions, and it just culminated. It continued to grow and grow. I started getting submissions from everywhere around the world. The mailbox, the mailman didn't know what was happening. I didn't know what was happening. What is happening? You know, Lord, tell me what is going on. So I continued to just follow the spirit and the flow of the people, the cause, the struggle. It's always been about identifying with an organization that is in the community that is helping a cause. And we focus on literacy, adoption, men's health, women's health, elder care. And, you know, it just doesn't end. We're going to be focusing on HIV and AIDS and abuse, and it just continues. You know, as long as you're in touch with the community and you have people like everybody here on the line that are so passionate about your soul work, you know, and you make these types of networks work and it carries on, it's gumbo, baby.
It's just all so good. It sure is. A savory blend, as you put it. You know, my food. Love it, love it, love it. Now, Dee LaBrie, same question to you. When did you begin the soul work, and what was your inspiration?
For me, I credit it to two sources. One, definitely my mother, because my mother was a singer, and she kind of raised me. Well, my grandmother was deep in the church, and back when I was younger, you know, we all did the whole going to church and, like, listening to the music and singing in church. But on the even more personal note, in our household, my mother was all about the soul music, like from reggae. She just gave me such a vast, just a vast amount of music to listen to. And she actually used to have me sing with her. So I would say that's when it really began. Like she had a good mix of music and culture in our household. And so, like, she had the pictures of Africa. She had the, like, Malcolm X books and the Roots movies and, you know, just all the, like the different styles and cultures of being Black. And, like, she really showed me a diverse views of what it meant to be, you know, Black and African. And she connected those dots for me. My mom was also involved in the schools, and she worked in the community centers, and she was even involved with the Black Panthers. So I got a good balance of that in my household, and she raised me as an artist. So she gave me crayons and paints and, you know, all this music and records. And when rap was coming up, I used to study all that stuff. I was really deep into art and music, and I used to learn from watching TV and go walk the streets and see people doing stuff. And I used to try to scratch her records and try to DJ and, So I think it really started there. And then once I got, you know, on my own, like where I got to be a young, you know, where I could go out on my own in junior high and early high school, you know, rap was the thing in Oakland. So, you know, it was this is good that we tie this into Black history, because, like, that the music from Africa that, you know, eventually spawned into, you know, rock music and blues and soul and all these musics that's so much a part of our culture. Like, I caught the wave of hip hop. Like, that was the train that was coming in when I was young. So, but to me, I see hip hop as a direct connection to the musics my mom was listening to and my grandmother was listening to. Like, my mom was down. My grandmother was best friends with Maya Angelou. So, like, all that stuff affected me, and maybe I didn't even know back then. Like, the poetry of Maya Angelou, like, Maya Angelou named my grandmother in the book, and my mom used to tell me this stuff, and I'd be like, oh, okay, you told me that, like, 10 times.
Now it means up to you, don't
know, dude. Yeah, when I grow up and finally meet Maya Angelou, and she knows my grandmother and my mom, she used to change my mom's diapers, these have to affect me as an artist. So, you know, growing up as an artist in the old hip hop, that's kind of what I was talking about earlier about being from this kind of middle generation where I caught the Public Enemies and the African Bambaataz, like names like that, like when you were called like Tupac Shakur and, you know, Public Enemy and KRS-One. It's like all these deep names. Like, I came up with that, like long before, like that was a big influence on me. And even growing up in Oakland where a lot of crime was going on, a lot of gangster rap was going on, there was still a certain consciousness to the hip hop. Like even if it was bad or about bad stuff, it was so entrenched in the hood stories, like the griots, you know, it was really telling stories, and like you had to heed those stories. Even if they weren't necessarily telling you to put a fist in the air, they were telling you survival stories, and we soaked that up. And so that became a huge part of me being a rapper. And so now to this day, that's why I have songs like It Ain't Easy. Like, it's not special to me. That's what you're supposed to do. Like, the way I was raised, if you're an artist or you have any influence in the community, you're supposed to give back. Like, you're supposed to do that. Like, it's not it's not like a special thing you deserve extra praise for. If you make music, you're supposed to at some point do something that has meaning to it to someone else. Like, you have your fun moments, but sometimes you have to have something that has substance. Well, what's the point of even doing it? And if you got some type of something to give to the community, you're supposed to go give it, and you're supposed to share it as best you can, and that's just a natural thing the way I was raised. You know,
like
what I mean?
Maya Angelou says, like she says, each one teach one, you know, that's what you're supposed to do, and that's your way of giving back. Okay, and speaking of giving back, we're going to listen to how De La Brie gives it back with It Ain't Easy.
This song is dedicated to all the folks in the struggle, my grandmother Mandy Bell Dixon, my auntie Samantha. You know what I'm saying? Everybody that's doing it and trying to make it. You know what I'm saying? Let's do this. Yo, yo. This ain't coming from nobody special, but don't give up, dawg, cause I ain't gon' let you. No need to lecture, life is gon' stress you and test you. But like Pac, I bet you can get knowledge, respect the scholars. Peep the text in Malcolm X's autobiography, or the great Bob Marley's discography. Root Saga G, that was college to me. It taught me that this country ain't giving no apologies for hanging black folks like apostrophes. Honestly, this just bothers me. African American policy, democracy, hell no, not for me. I'm a king, but these cops try to Rodney me. Kill another, probably me.
Wanna see you, but no, we can't stop. Stick to the plot. Club first, covering my head, making my own bed. Naive at times, believe whatever it said, it's not. Peaches and cream in the ghetto, reaching for a dream. Diamonds and fame, it's not as sweet as it seems. Easy to achieve without stumbling, falling. Getting back up, walking, toy balling. A pussy suckers give room. Eating with my hands, didn't have a silver spoon. Hard to understand the simple thoughts of a fool. Or a reputable, caught without a tool. Live life without rules, regulations, and boundaries. Top of the game now, supporting my family. Check for convo and expect the temptation. Dealer Brian Quinn wreck in the nation. Pressure makes diamonds, pressure bust pipes. Pressure on the rock, I'ma show you a lot.
Trying to get to the top, just wanna see you. But no, you can't stop. Stick to the plot, you'll be busted, head right. Come on.
So what you gon' do then?
Take care of them kids, so what you gon' do then?
Stand and defend, LeBron San Quinn got plans to win. And I can't pretend I don't feel the pain or feel the strain. Will sunshine kill the rain? Cause this dark cloud follows me. Will the hood just swallow me? We all grow up in poverty. Owning property's an anomaly. Ask Grandma LaBrie on Holly Street. We can't get over the hump like black eyed peas with this crab in the bucket mentality. So I'ma just sit back, stack these G's. Give back to the sea,
give back to the street.
Fit back to the beat,
that's yours to keep.
Feel more to the deep.
Get dough, don't sleep.
Trying to get to the top, just wanna see you. But no, you can't stop. Stick to the plot.
Some people don't realize how much San Quinn, you know, the type of music he does. He, you know, they mix us up a lot. They forget that it's not easy for us. But sometimes we're not telling the most beautiful story all the time. But
right.
Like San Quentin drops a lot of
yeah.
powerful music, and I like to shine a light on artists. Sometimes we tend to dwell on the negative, but like a lot of artists have a lot of important stories to tell too,
true.
And they don't want to tell them. You know, like
right.
like right across the water in Oakland, my grandmother, when she moved to Oakland. My grandfather came from the Air Force, and he moved to Richmond and to Oakland. They moved to the black area. Then they got a nice little area where it was all still white, which is the hood today is all a black hood. But back then it was a white area where they didn't want black people. And when my grandmother and grandfather moved in, this is in East Oakland in the 60s, they were called niggers and told they couldn't be in the area, and white people started moving. And this was just a couple generations ago. And sometimes people don't want to hear that story. They say we make it up and exaggerate. So I have to tell songs like that. I have to explain that it's not about us always just exactly, but it's not always about us just complaining or asking for handouts or saying that it's all because the white folks did this and that. But we do have to tell our honest story. Sometimes you do feel good to be black, but it's not always easy. And that's what these type of songs represent. There's an uplifting spirit to what we do, because there would be no Obama or no Oprah or no Beyonce, Jay-Z, none of them, if it wasn't for our fight.
That
people act like we just popped up one day and then we have the Michael Jordans and the famous athletes and all these people in business going to college. And we all fought. If I'm not mistaken, there was a time where we weren't even allowed to read in this country.
That's right. That's right.
Come on
now. No, it's been a struggle. It's been
reading.
A struggle for a while, and it's still a struggle. We still have a
people
lot.
People act
of
like we just popped up and got handed affirmative action, and everything was all good from there.
Not at all. We know that it is a struggle, most definitely. But thank you, D. LaBrie. We truly appreciate that, Loretta.
Wait, so let me interject. I just want D. LaBrie to let us know when is that song coming out and who is dedicated to. While we're still talking about the song, please.
Well, it's out now. It's available on my Bandcamp. It's free for this month. It's all free. Anybody can download it. We're giving the CDs out at the community centers on the tour. It's on my website, dlabrie.com. So get your free download, because it's dropping on the album. The whole album drops March 7th, but that song is out now. So feel free, indulge, share it in your classrooms, play it on the way to work. You know, I did that for the people, so, you know. Go get it now. The song, I dedicated the song to my grandmother, who I told you was really close with Maya Angelou. And I also dedicated it to my auntie, who is her youngest daughter, my mother's youngest sister, who was really close with me. And she really played a big part in my youth. And both of them have passed. So they are black history to me, you know, big time, because some of the things my grandmother did were really amazing. You know, she was a very eccentric woman. And taught me a lot, you know, kind of different from my dad's mom. My dad's mom was more, she was also amazing, but she was more of a home builder, housewife. My grandmother was very active, very much in the limelight. You know, she got her degree at like 50 plus years old. And like, she did a lot of interesting things on the, on the entrepreneurial side and on the, not necessarily dealing with directly with the household. But just her accomplishments were amazing.
Awesome. Well, happy Black History to their legacy.
Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, Miss Johnson's son is also on that song, too.
That's
Eric,
right. My
Eric
son
is on
Eric
that song.
Is doing the hook. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
He's on the song talking and making comments. And that was dope, too, to have him there. And he was so young at the time, you know.
Excellent.
Absolutely,
excellent.
Absolutely. And for those that did get a chance to listen to the song, Kiana Bean is my daughter, known before the song, and Eric Wade on that song, too. So we're going to turn it back over to Rachel, but I just wanted to make sure that people knew we were dedicating the song to coming out on the album on
March 7th, everybody
the
on the call. Kato. Kato, too. Yeah, that's my best friend. Hey, I dedicate to all the people who helped inspire it, and that's all the black folks in the world.
Yeah, and we appreciate it. Most definitely. And you'll get a chance before we end to give us your contact information again for those that might not have it. And just so you know, De La Brie, we did, you know, recognize your friend Cato in the beginning of the show, and so we did pay homage to him as well. And again, thank you so much.
That means a lot to him, I'm sure.
So, Miss Loretta, we know that you have a piece to perform called Being Black. We would love to hear about it. Also, before you go into it, just tell us how it came about.
Okay. I just was sitting one day, and it just, when I write my portrait, it actually just kind of comes to me, and it'll start, and I just go with the flow, and it just comes out. I can't remember the actual year that I wrote it, because a lot of the poetry that I started writing when I was 9, from the age of 9 to 17, it got destroyed in a house fire that I had, my mother had at her home. So I lost all of that. So everything that I have now is from the age of 17 up until current. And this, the book is only a smidget of the big notebooks that I have still at home, have not been
archived.
Yes. That's just in the archives. But this Being Black is on page 15 of my book, A Poet's Music, Heart, Soul, and Spirit.
Okay.
And as you said, it's entitled Being Black, and I will begin that for you right now.
Okay.
When did being black mean you had to be hard? Being black used to mean we were led by the Lord. Since when did being black mean you didn't have to pray? Being black used to mean you wouldn't miss a day. Since when did being black mean you had to be a disgrace? Being black used to mean we were proud of our race. Since when did being black you couldn't care for someone else? Being black used to mean not only did you care, but you put them above yourself. Since when did being black mean you weren't as smart as the others? Being black used to mean we tutored and encouraged one another. Being black means we embrace every weakness and overcome our struggles. Being black means we work hard every day to accomplish our goals and dreams. Being black means you share what you have with the ones that don't have. Being black means we are all sisters and brothers. Being black means you can pass the test if you study and concentrate and do your very best. Being black means you are persistent when doors are slammed shut in your face because of the color of your skin. Being black means we persevere until we win. Being black means we strive hard to reach perfection and we don't become disheartened by the person we see in the mirror's reflection. Being black means we know who we are, a race strong from our past and that has come too far to turn into what society is trying to make us into. I am better than that, and so are you. We are a people who fear the Lord. We must return to that old landmark and again instill in our babies the importance of salvation and dedication to God. Being black means your mind and your spirit belongs to Him. If we obey the instructions, we would have unity and strength, and division among us would be so very. Being black is dignity, goodness, respect, and so much more. We must strive harder to redeem our image of blackness, strive even harder than we have strived before.
That's so good.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Not a part in there. Most definitely. Makes you think.
Yes, ma'am.
Almost like a proverb, you know. That's why I really, really wanted her to share that with us. It's like a proverb.
Anthem, you know, an anthem. Yes, most definitely.
Nice piece.
Everyone can relate to that. Everyone can definitely relate to that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So, Miss Beverly, do you have a piece you would like to share as well?
Well, I don't mind if I do.
And you know me, I'm all about the gumbo. So, so entitled, I will bring you gumbo for the soul.
Okay.
I am a savory blend of many things, originally born an African, an extension of those beaten, stripped, and in 1619 brought here on a Dutch slave ship, torn from the bosom of the motherland, ostracized and renamed American. I'm a savory blend of the free blacks that fought with the Minutemen. In the Revolutionary War, my people bear the battle scars. A savory blend of Benjamin Banneker with a blessed pen created the first almanac that took more than a notion. Like Richard Allen, who in 1794 founded the Bethel African Methodist Church, personifying spiritual God-fearing women and men, by God and faith, my destiny is predetermined. Take 1829, when David Walker created a pamphlet and appealed to the colored people of the world. At that time, this work was the first of its kind. Or in the same year, the creation of the first National Negro Convention, I'm a savory blend of all I've mentioned. I'm a savory blend of the men and women that took over the slave ship Amistad and won their freedom, now our freedom, often taken for granted. Excuse me. I'm a savory blend of Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, and strong black women like Rosa Parks, Mary McLeod Bethune, and Barbara Jordan, blended with Ella Fitzgerald and Lena Horne, gifted to sing, and those that pressed towards the mark like Susan L. Taylor and Coretta Scott King, spirited to sing, spirited to succeed like Madam T.J. Walker and Oprah Winfrey, just to name a few, poetically influenced like Maya Angelou. A blend of the time between 1922 and 1929, the Harlem Renaissance. A blend of strong men like James Stone, the first black to enlist to fight for the Union, and Edward G. Walker and Charles L. Mitchell, who in 1866 sat on the American legislature of Massachusetts. I am a savory blend of many more men from the late 1800s and 1900s, Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, Carter G. Woodson, A. Philip Randolph, and Jesse Owens. Their great achievements are no mystery, products of our heritage that made history. I'm predisposed to greatness, hell-bent on making it. A savory blend of many firsts, from men like Jackie Robinson, Ralph J. Bunch, Thomas Bradley, Kenneth Gibson, and Maynard H. Jackson. Then we all know of the many men who gave their lives fighting, marching, preaching. Malcolm X and Martin were always teaching, while some still carry the torch, like Al Sharpton, President Barack Obama, Tavis Smiley, and Jesse L. Jackson. Too many to mention of our heritage that comprise this beautiful blend, and there are some of which don't bear the same color of our skin, but they too contributed to that of which we've benefited. All that I am goes back to them, the heroes of the past and the torchbearers of the present. I'm a savory blend of Big Mama, a protege with her soul stirred in. I won't stop till I win, and then I'll start something back up again, like Gumbo for the Soul, supporting education. I'm a savory blend of generations, those that came before and the ones following.
Mm. Go ahead, girl. I like that. I like that. Gumbo with a purpose. Gumbo with a purpose.
Like that.
It makes you think a little bit every time you eat gumbo from now on. I do. I do. I think about
all
you.
Right,
I
now.
Think about purpose. And, you know, it is a savory blend of different things, all the different elements that go into it.
Absolutely.
So when
absolutely.
Did you write this at the beginning of your journey with gumbo or somewhere in the middle? When did you compose?
Actually, probably more towards the end, about 2006, because we published this book in 2007. So, and I'm usually bringing up the rear because I read through every submission that we get, and the editors and I go over what's going to be in our anthologies. And so I'm always the last one to sit down and say, you know, okay, when are you going to put something together.
So, you know,
I had to sit down with in my spiritual, you know, realm and go in and pull something out. And I, you know, I did use a guide that helped me go through our history as well. So, again, we go back to education. You know, I didn't pull these facts out of my hat. I wasn't taught this in school, and there's still a lot that hasn't been recognized in school. And so I, too, had to go back and pull up some information and references and research and get my facts straight about, you know, our history and our legacy. And I just want to encourage those of us that are advocates for education to really press that more about our culture and our heritage. I didn't learn about slavery and black history through our own people and at home and anything like that. I had a white sixth grade teacher, and it was in East Palo Alto at Castaño Elementary School, and our classroom was all black students. And this woman had a passion to get whatever she could to teach us about what little they had for African or black history then. And it wasn't a such thing as black history, but she took it upon herself. It wasn't such thing as black history in the school curriculum. So she took it upon herself to dig and find information, and that's where I first learned anything about Harriet Tubman and slavery. And so I really feel like hadn't it not been for that, it would have been a long time coming to get any exposure to, you know, connect this little black girl to who she is. And I'm indebted to my teacher, Carrie Townsend Boucher, for that, my sixth grade teacher.
And it's something when, you know, you find one particular person that just takes that interest, and usually it's like that, you know, that people don't have a lot of people that do it wherever they went. Whenever I talk to someone, it's always like that one person that really, really, you know, dedicated themselves to people finding out what they needed to know about their history. It's a shame that we have to, you know, that we have to fight for it. It should be something that's automatically a part of it. You know, just like the other cultures who have the same problem. But what we're talking about right now is black history, and it's a shame that we have to, you know, say,
we have
look,
to fight
you know,
for it.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
And like Dee LaRue was saying earlier, you know, it's like, you know, they don't want us to discuss the truth. And, you know, even some black people want to say, you know, wouldn't you rather just forget about that? And I have to say right here, I celebrate 20 years of being crack-free tomorrow, 20 years, and I used to be on the streets of East Palo Alto. So for me, that is my black history. Hallelujah,
yes,
I give all praise to God.
Yes, it
but
is. Hey, clap, we know you are doing it, and we're so appreciative of the lessons that you bring to Gumbo and your soul work with, you know, what you've been through and the compassion.
My Jesus, thank you. But, you know, I've had a friend, and I bring that up because I had a friend when it came to writing about that piece of my history, say, well, we want to just, you know, forget that and forget that time and that era. And no, that was a huge part of who I am, what I've overcome. And it happened to a community in an era of time where we're looking at the products of that generation, and some aren't bearing the best fruit. Some have made the best out of what we gave them and handed off. Dee LaRue, that generation where my daughter Kiana Bean and Eric and Khalid, my daughter Kaisha, you know, these are the generations of kids that are products of what we did through an era that you can't just wipe it away from history and say, well, let's just skim over that and, you know, talk about the good times. Oh, no.
Right. You
know.
Yeah, because when you skim over that, when you skip it, then you like kind of lose the whole context of what happened to many of us in the hood. Like, they like to talk about it like it's just out the blue, everybody just had it hard, or people just wanted this, but there's a lot of background to it, and it takes a long time to uncover that. Like, I even had to figure out, like, I was like, okay, so if I was raised in Oakland and, you know, the whole crack epidemic and, you know, like the police brutality stuff, I'm like, okay, so somebody asked me from another country, but what was before that? You know what I'm saying? I even had to do some history, and then I realized, okay, there was a time where we were on the upswing. We were thriving in certain areas before the crack epidemic. I even found out that black communities were on the upswing, and I found there's so much more to black history. I think that really Black History Month is just the tip of the iceberg, because there's so much more. Like, when I took a college course on it, or like, just by even talking to your elders, you find out so many interesting facts. Like, yeah. I didn't realize how hard it was to start the first black college, and like to like all these little things, like the Harlem Renaissance, and like how rock used to was like Chuck Berry, and like even just recently, I just really looked at the Medgar Evers movie. Like, of course, I've heard his name thrown out there, but to see the movie and to see what he went through, like, it's just amazing, and it just reminds me of, like, okay, my mom, but just even my mom went through a lot. Like, you know what I mean? Like, even like you said, like Ms. Johnson went through a lot. Like, all of us kind of have a tie to this, and that's what I think is important about black history. It's like we have to remember we do all have some tie to this, and we have experienced it to a degree. Even the president has experienced racism based on this history. Why do people even ask why? Like, why did Obama experience more racism than any president in history? People like, well, to me, it's not about race. To me, that's a cop-out. You cannot sit there and look at what Obama went through to be president and not, even if you
still
disagree with the politics.
Still going through.
And even if you disagree with the policy.
All this producing a birth certificate, who ever made such a big uproar about that? And we know that's probably another show. But it's
never.
Just, you know, you cannot just overlook what's so blatantly in our face.
And when people say stuff like, oh, black women are loose and black men are rapists, I've had young women of different races tell me their parents told them, stay away from black men, they'll rob you and they'll rape you. That is unacceptable in 2012. It's been unacceptable, but people need to start questioning this stuff, because every race has its problems. Every race has bad seeds. Like, there's not like all black people are righteous and good-natured. It's not like we're all bad. But why is it that the media feels so comfortable comparing us, like even just saying that we're all rappers, and that all the women are strippers? Like, even just saying little things like all we do is play basketball, that is an insult directly. And I'm a young man who definitely played basketball, and I'm proud to say that a lot of my black friends would excel at basketball. But to say that's all I am, or to have little Asian girls and little white girls thinking when I come that I'm finna be a rapist, that is a horrible insult. And you have to ask, why? You have to ask, why do I think of black people this way? Like, why do I feel, like, nervous when a white cop's behind me? Why do I feel like white people look down on me, even when they don't sometimes? All these are problems that had to deal with racism that black people fought against. All of them. Like, they tell me, somebody said, oh, I see these black girls dancing in these videos. I'm like, that's a small percentage, one, of black women who actually do rap videos. Second of all, some of these black women who do rap videos are models who are dancers and professional dancers. Just because they're sexy does not mean they're freaks or loose. You know what I'm saying? Like, you need to get it right. You know what I'm saying? Like, stop demonizing what we do. And first of all, and the only thing that's going to ever solve that is by learning the history. That's why Black History Month is so important. They need to teach to these people what really happened, so they can stop saying, all blacks do this and blacks are on crack and da-da-da. And then they will know this is why a lot of black people are on crack. Then people, black people who may have been hooked on crack, can have some pride and say, okay, I am not just some type of animal. I have been through this because of this, and I can fight this. I can fight this oppression because I know what it is. It exists. I am maybe looked down upon because they are equating me to the slave days, and this is not the slave days, so I no longer, I liberate myself off of the history I learned. Once I read Malcolm X, it was over. I was like, okay, no more of this BS. I know what's up now. You know what I'm saying? And that led me to even be, like, understanding of other cultures. So it all starts with understanding and loving yourself and loving your own culture. There's too many traps out there to make us blacks not love ourselves. And just from the love I feel on this phone call, we are an example that that's not true. Black people can get along. We don't just kill each other. We all black men do not, are not bad fathers. All black women aren't baby mamas. We need to stop letting them talk about us like that. You know what I'm saying? That's just not how it is. The struggles we go through are very real, and they real for a reason. They're not some genetic disposition because we're black. And I'm sorry, I'm going off, but that's how I feel.
You're fine. And that's why we have these types of forums so that they can be expressed and we can learn from each other and we can know that, you know, there's certain things that we are not supposed to put up with. There's certain things that we're all going through and, you know, not hush-hush. And speaking of letting people speak their mind, we're going to take a call. We have a caller who has been listening in and patiently had their hand up, and we truly appreciate area code 214. You are on Gumbo for the Soul Radio. Who are we speaking with?
This is Shonda Tate.
Hi, Shonda. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I was just kind of listening, and, you know, I'm a teacher, and so when I'm working with my students, I notice that there is a disconnect, and I work with, you know, between 12 and 15-year-olds, and I know there's a disconnect in the amount of pride that they feel because they don't know their history. And it's so much responsibility in having a conversation. But there needs to be a conversation that can be had that makes sure that everyone understands that everything that the speaker just said, you know, that we are not racist and we are prideful and we have value. You know, those conversations need to be had publicly, and they need to be held in a responsible way, because there are some thoughts that kids have that they kind of internalize because they don't have anything to counter that. And, you know, you get supposedly that 1 month where you get to delve into that. Well, my classroom is a lifetime. As long as you are in my presence, let me build your pride and your self-esteem in who you are and what you come from, because you can't represent what I'm about if you don't know what you're about. So we have to have those dialogues. Once they leave me, who's feeding that the next year? Who's feeding that? Because it's not being fed at home, not with all of them. I'm kind of generalizing. But it's not being fed at home. So when do they connect to all the power that they come from? You know, I always, you know, talk to them, and they're like, oh, slavery this and slavery that. But what do you really know? Because people brought you from your own country to another country. There was no tutor to teach you language. Somehow you communicated. You know, no one told you how this world works because they didn't value your impression of this world. But somehow your people rose above all of those things without assistance. And look at where you are now. You're a product of so much power mentally, and they don't realize that. They just see slavery. They beat us. But what about that? What about what we did as a people? That we had communities that thrived on only our manpower. We didn't need anything from anyone else. Can you do that again? Could you recreate that world? Do you have that entrepreneurial spirit to do that? And they don't understand that you're not inventing anything new when you have a good idea. You're a product of people that had those kinds of ideas a long time ago. So you should be there and beyond. So, you know, but if they don't have those conversations, if no one's having responsible interaction with them, then this is what we get. We get that disconnect, and it's unfortunate, and it hurts me, but I try to work to not see those gaps forever. But there needs to be a dialogue between all the races about the stereotypes, but it has to be responsible, it has to move somewhere, and it has to have an outcome. You know, it can't just be, let's gripe, but it has to have a purpose.
Yeah, it has to have a call of action. It definitely has to have a call of action. I agree with you on that. And if we have more people, you know, like we were saying earlier, each one teach one, more people like you, and in different ways, like De La Brie with, you know, his message of music, and Loretta with her poetry, and Bev with her, you know, her books, and, you know, and myself, and whoever, however you do it, you know, you're pushing our race along if you contribute to the positiveness of, you know, letting everyone know about who we are and how you can better yourself, especially with our young ones, because they are our future.
Right.
Well, we thank you for sharing that with us, lady. Appreciate you calling in.
Have the outlet, because I can be on that soapbox forever.
Not a problem. Well,
I definitely want to commend you too. I respect what you said, and I think it's dope that you're teaching in the first place, because, you know, I've seen so many black teachers struggle. I've been in classrooms myself, and I've been in schools where I've been teaching classes, and, you know, somebody will come into class and be like, and act like I'm a student or something, and I'm a grown man. And, these things I cannot say, they're not racially motivated. Like, if I was, you know, some white guy, you know, with a different look, maybe they would not be, you know, approaching me in that way. And we go through those things, and that's mm-hmm. partly because, and then some of us don't know the background as youngsters, so we lash out, we get angry, and we let the anger build up, and then we start hating all races, or we start disliking people, and we start having that insecurity. And sometimes it ain't about race, but we think it is, because we don't know when it is and when it ain't. We just kind of had that instinct and that protection right there of like, okay, you looking down on me because I'm black, so I'm finna flip. But when you start learning the background, you can just laugh at those people and be like, you think that I'm supposed to feel bad because you think we're all thugs, or because you think we're all this and that. You're the dumb one. You know what I'm saying? Like, you the one need to come into the times that we're really in. I know who I am, so you can have that joke and laugh all by yourself, because I ain't hearing it.
Exactly.
And that's what these kids need, that feeling when they go out into the world. Even if you went to a bad high school that didn't prepare you for a white college that got all these students that went through all these programs that you couldn't afford, you still should have your pride, and you should still walk in there and say, not because I'm black, I'm this and that, but you should say, I am standing on the shoulders of a great people that did struggle to get me this far, and I can do whatever they can do. I can be the example.
That was me.
I can be the example.
Predominantly black neighborhood lifestyle, and went to a predominantly white college, private school, and I was the only black student in many of my classes, and they had come from private education, and I came from public, and, I mean, I survived, and it made me appreciate who I was more, and it made me value who I was more, and I would not give up, and that is why I am where I am, and that is why I've
been so much. And you are black history.
I am, and that's why I don't let my students off the hook, because you don't know where I've been, so let me tell you where you're going. So, you know, they have to be ready. They have to be ready for any. I mean, and even as an educator in that building, the white teachers look at me in awe when I speak correctly or I write something phenomenal, and they say, wow. Well, what did you expect?
Mm-hmm.
I have a degree, like you have a degree. So what
exactly.
You expect? You know, but you deal with it and you move on, and, you know.
You're right. I'm sick of that whole, oh, you're well-spoken. You're one of the smart ones. I'm so tired
right.
of that. Because I can go into the hood and speak to a cat on the corner, and he may understand what I'm talking about, but I might not have to say all these big, you know, like, I might not have to say all these big terms and words, but I'm pretty sure somebody who going through it in the hood and learned some survival tactics and may know a thing or two that don't have nothing to do with no big level book or no big level college, but they surviving with nothing, mate. You know what I'm saying? You can learn from anybody.
So hard not.
Yeah, I never really was a fan of, you have to, when you go to, like, say you go to a job and you got a white boss, or it's like more of a whiter environment, to be accepted, you have to talk a certain way, or you have to kind of prove to them. I'm not saying that you have to go into every situation trying to overdo, all right, I'm from the hood, so I talk like this, and I talk, but you should be comfortable and confident and be respected either way. That's all I'm saying. Like, if you go into a place and you're not telling nobody nothing rude, but you may talk with a different dialect or a different style of speech, they can't be firing you because you say, hey, what's up, to somebody at the office. Oh, he's talking unprofessional, or come on now. Oh, he got dreadlocks, so that's not cool. That's not part of our, you know, dress code. Like, those type of racist things, I'm not feeling that. Like, we should be able to feel comfortable being ourselves in the environment either way. You know what I mean?
Most definitely. And so much has been said that even could run into a whole nother show. But we are running out of time. So, again, I want to thank you for calling in, lady. Appreciate you so much. I want to share this piece with us to contribute to our Black History conversation. It's called My Skin is Black, But Not My Spirit. My skin is the color of coal, so there are some doors that dare not open to me. There are some places I'm told not to tread or explore. There are some ignorant people who choose not to know me or at times gaze upon my face. There are some money handlers who make money uneasy for me to obtain. There are some scholars that make knowledge hard for me to pursue. And when I ask why, often my voice falls on dead ears. So sometimes opportunities are temporarily taken from my reach. But aha, the hammering at one soul doesn't merely exist only by outside forces, foes, or colors. The brotherhood of one's own flesh and skin tone can slash just as long and just as deep sometimes, if not repaired constantly by hope and determination, secured also by healthy association. But I am a warrior of strength, so when some try to enslave me from things I so rightfully desire, or some lay stones by which they want me to stumble, my soul remains free and untainted, untorched by the ignorance, because it I control. Every strike against me inflames my earthly frame with the powers of courage and fortitude. Proudly I strut, aglow in the dark skin that I'm proudly wearing. Continuously I press on with the duties of my forefathers and mothers, that of bravery, pride, and self-esteem, instilling these qualities in my offspring and relentlessly continuing to fight for which is mine, never, ever losing sight of it. Happily, I push forward towards my endeavors, seizing the days that are filled with peace and praying for more to help soar this earth colorfully, swooping high above the ignorant sum, because my skin is black, but not my spirit.
Woo! Powerful.
Hallelujah.
And that's
that. Where's that clap button? Where's that clap machine?
I know, huh?
Okay. Thank you much.
Powerful,
yes.
Powerful. Thank you so much, Rachel. I had to make sure that we were sharing, and I'm so thankful that Rachel was already on that note. I called her and I said, Rachel, we need to share too. She said, girl, please, I already have mine ready. I thank you for sharing and
my pleasure.
Black History special.
No problem. And so before we go, I want our guests, beginning with Delibri, tell us how we can get in contact with you, how we can get your products. Let the audience know, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, the easiest way is dlabrie.com, DLABRIE.com. That's my website. It has everything up there. If y'all want to get the direct download of the song, It Ain't Easy, it's free on DLabrie.com. That'll lead you to my Bandcamp link where you could just download it pretty simply and you could spread it to all your friends. Also, I'm on Twitter, DLabrie, at DLabrie, Facebook, DLabrie, EOG. And, yeah, that's, you can Google me, hit me up. I'm in the community. I'm ready to come build with you. And, you know, we'll have a video out for It Ain't Easy real soon. Look for that. And the album drops March 7th. Rest in peace, Kato.
Well, we definitely enjoyed it.
Right.
We enjoyed you as well, DLabrie. Looking forward to you coming back to the show again and continuing this conversation. You are definitely an inspiration to, you know, young people everywhere and, you know, people of all ages because you're doing your thing, and we truly, truly appreciate you and all that you have to say. So thank you so much for that. Enjoyed your music as well.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Yes, yes. Loretta, tell us how we can get in contact with you and get your products as well.
Okay, wonderful. You can reach me on my website, which is www.apoetsmusic.com, which is the title of my new book. Or you can also reach me. I'm on Twitter under A Poets Music. Also, my email is my first name, my middle initial, and my last name at apoetsmusic.com as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. And thank you again. We truly enjoyed your piece, Being Black. It was excellent, and truly look forward to your works as well. Our caller, since you are on the line, we know you do some magnificent things as well. Let us know how we can get in contact with you for your services. Let us know what your services are as well.
Oh, wow. On the spot. Gifted Ink is a writing service. I do ghostwriting, editing services, and my website is www.giftedink.com, and that's GIFT-D.com, and it lists out all of my services there. So
excellent.
That's me.
And thank you for joining us. We truly appreciate your words of wisdom, and keep up the soul work that you're doing with those children, by all means.
Thank you.
Miss Bev, our executive producer and creator of All That Is Gumbo. Any last words?
She tickles me. I just want to thank everybody for taking out your time, and thank you, Chandra, for calling in. I had dogs barking in the background, so I had to mute things out. But when I came back, I said, oh, okay, I know that voice. I know that strong, stern teacher that I'm listening to right now. Ladies and gentlemen, she don't play. I want to thank my Auntie Loretta. Hugs and kisses.
Welcome.
And I know one day we will see each other soon. And
yes,
this
ma'am.
Is my godson. Keep your soul work going. I want to congratulate you on your commercial being on the BET Hip Hop Awards, too, for everybody to know. DLabrie is definitely carving out history. He travels the globe. He's all up in the UK, and I'm very proud of him. And like I said, we're looking for this young voice coming through some other airwaves that we have under wraps right now. So, and always, my sweet girl, Lady Serenity, thank you so much. And I just feel so very blessed. Thank you for, you know, giving us your soul work to make Black History Special with Gumbo for the Soul and my work.
It has been my pleasure, always, always been my pleasure. I am proud to be a part of the Gumbo. And so, folks, that's going to end it for this special episode, this Black History wonderful meal we just had for Gumbo for the Soul Radio. Be sure to tune in here March 8th for Women's History Month. Please check the show page and look at all the wonderful lineups that we have coming up. We're going to be shedding light on life in an abundant way. Again, I want to thank all our guests on behalf of DLabrie, Loretta Hardrick, Beverly Black Johnson, and myself. While it ain't easy being Black, we have our savory blend of gumbo. So our skin is Black, but not our spirit. It's been a great meal and definitely a family affair. We leave you with Sly and the Family Stone. Till next time, have a wonderful and rich night. Good night.
And
it's a family affair. up to be somebody that just loves to learn. And another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them. You see, it's in the blood. Both kids are good and bound. Blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.